6 o'clock, WMFO Medford. I'm going to take a quick break, but when I come back, I will give you my number one superhero movie of all time. Before that, what is this thing doing over here? Before that, we're going to take a little break and enjoy some Giorgio Moroder here on WMFO Medford.
Everybody's got the fever. Saturday Night Fever. Paramount Pictures presents Saturday Night Fever, starring John Travolta as Tony Manero, the king of the discos. Every guy wants to dance like him. Every girl wants to be with him. Saturday Night Fever. Catch it. Rated R. Under 17. Not admitted without parent.
I'm going to the hardware store.
Oh, will you pick up 800 lumen bulbs?
800 more flowers? The neighbors will think we're wacky.
Not flower bulbs, light bulbs.
Come on, Dad. Lumens tell you how bright the bulb is. We can replace our 60-watt bulbs with energy-saving bulbs that give off about 800 lumens.
So, we'll save money.
Right.
Got it. 800 lumens and more savings.
Lumens, the new way to shop for light. Learn more at energysavers.gov.
WMFO Medford 91.5 FM. It is Watch This with Chris Earle. I am Derek Gary. I'll be your Chris Earle for the next hour or so. 855-915-9636. And yes, I did the most despicable broadcaster trick in the world. I gave you my countdown of the top five superhero movies and saved number one until after the break. We are shameless people in this industry. I count myself among them. Hey, if it keeps you around past the break, works for me. If not, you can go to WMFO.org at any time you want, click on schedule, and grab podcasts of these shows. So check that out. So my five top superhero movies of all time. Number five was Avengers Infinity War, which would have been higher if not for the fact that you have to see some of the preceding movies to fully get it, but still a remarkable achievement. Number four, Spider-Man 2. This is the bridge between the practical special effects superhero films of the 80s and 90s and the CGI films that we have today. Number three, Deadpool. It's fun. Come on, it's Deadpool. Number two, Superman 1, and I will extend that to Superman 2, the Richard Donner cut, which basically is the template for the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And coming in at number one, I don't think there is any question that this is the greatest superhero movie ever made.
Ago, these cops and lawyers wouldn't dare cross any of you. I mean, what happened?
So what are you proposing?
It's simple. Kill the Batman. Here's my card.
Bruce, this is Harvey Dent.
Rachel's told me everything about you.
I certainly hope not. You once told me that we'd be together. Did you mean it?
Bruce, don't make me your only hope for a normal life.
You're Alfred, right?
That's right, sir.
Any psychotic ex-boyfriends I should be aware of?
Oh, you have no idea.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. We're tonight's entertainment. Well, hello, beautiful. You look nervous.
I've seen now what I have to become to stop men like him.
The night is darkest just before the dawn. I promise you, the dawn is coming.
And here we go. Come on.
deserves a better class of criminal.
And I'm gonna give it to him.
No!
You'll see.
I'll show you.
You either die a hero, or you live long enough to see yourself become the villain.
Will you be wanting the back putter?
The middle of the day, Alfred? Not very subtle.
The Lamborghini, then.
Much more subtle.
It is an Academy Award-winning superhero movie. Heath Ledger took home Best Supporting Actor for his portrayal of the Joker, which is one of the most iconic portrayals of villainy in motion picture history. There is no question that The Dark Knight is, hands down, the best, absolute best superhero movie ever made. Where do we even begin with it? It's perfect, almost perfect, from beginning to end. You don't need to see the previous movie to see this movie and understand what's going on. All you need to do is know who Batman is and know who the Joker is, and pretty much everyone does. It's standalone. The performances are spectacular. This is one of the first uses of IMAX in an action movie. There are so many reasons to recommend it and so many reasons to love it. If it has a fault, it is that it is overlong by a bit. Maggie Gyllenhaal, really not the strongest performance out of the bunch here. And Nolan can be a little ham-fisted in his writing at times. But there is so much entertainment to be had with The Dark Knight that it really is the only superhero movie that you need. And 11 years later, yet to be bettered. If you would like to see it in IMAX, the opportunity is coming up. On April 13th, if you are in New York City, April 20th, if you are in Ontario, Toronto, and for whatever reason, April 20th, if you're in Indianapolis, Indianapolis gets this, but Boston doesn't. The entire Christopher Nolan Batman Dark Knight trilogy will be shown in 70mm IMAX in a single 8-hour marathon. So you buy one ticket and you get all three films and you're stuck in the theater for 8 hours, but you're stuck for 8 hours with three great films. This is going to happen at the AMC Lincoln Square 13 IMAX in New York City on April 13th, the Ontario Place IMAX in Toronto on April 20th, and the Indiana State Museum IMAX Theater in Indianapolis also on April 20th. So if you're in the area, I would suggest getting those tickets right now, because this is a one-day event. There's going to be a couple out in California too, but those are the ones closer to us. This is going to be a one-day event. This will sell out fast. People love these movies. So there you've got my top five superhero films of all time. And I'm going to change direction now and talk about Netflix. If you listen to The Big Picture, you listened to the Oscars show a couple weeks ago, you may recall me saying that Roma is going to win all of these awards, and then Hollywood's going to wake up with a hangover on Monday morning and say, what did we do? We gave Netflix all these awards. Well, as it turns out, Roma did not get Best Picture because there are a lot of people in Hollywood who don't like Netflix. And they don't like Netflix because, well, let me let Steven Spielberg explain this to you. Spielberg was talking to ITV News over in the United Kingdom just a little bit before, a little after the Oscars. I think it was right after the Oscars. And he had this to say. This is Steven Spielberg. Quote, "Once you commit to a television format, you're a TV movie. You certainly, if it's a good show, deserve an Emmy, but not an Oscar. I don't believe films that are just given token qualifications in a couple of theaters for less than a week should qualify for the Academy Award nomination." And the internet imploded and everybody lost their mind and said, oh, old man yells at cloud, or Steven Spielberg's jealous. Well, let me tell you something. If your response to that quote, and this is the meat of the quote, once you commit to a television format, you're a TV movie. Okay. If you believe that Steven Spielberg is jealous, then you need to do some research, because Steven Spielberg is a multi-billionaire. He can get any movie that he wants made at any point in time. He produces television and film. He can do whatever he wants. Steven Spielberg is not jealous. Steven Spielberg has a level of freedom that very, very, very few people will ever enjoy in the entertainment industry. So he's not jealous. It's Old Man Yells at Cloud. No, it's really not Old Man Yells at Cloud. Unless you believe that Netflix, watching a movie on television and watching a movie in a movie theater are the same thing, and that the only difference between them is how they are distributed. If you believe that, then we need to talk, because you are, to put this kindly, very wrong. Now, Spielberg's argument is that Netflix goes and makes these movies, puts them in a theater for 3 weeks, and then they're Oscar eligible. Netflix is the only provider, by the way. They're both studio and distributor, which makes them a little bit unique. Most Hollywood studios don't distribute their own films. It will happen rarely, but it happens very rarely. Disney does, but the others generally don't. Netflix is the only provider, the only creator, studio, if you will, that wins both Emmys and Oscars. So they can submit their films. They could submit Roma, for example, for Emmy Awards as well as Academy Awards. Nobody else can do that. The cable networks very occasionally will get away with it with a documentary. And they'll do the same thing that Netflix does, which is they rent out a couple of theaters, show their movie for a week or so, or a couple of weeks, whatever the rules say, and then pull them out as soon as they can and put them on television so that everybody can watch them. Now, the film that Steven Spielberg is talking about in this case happens to be Roma. And Roma is the greatest work of cinema of 2018. I'm not going to take anything away from it. It is a brilliant film. However, there were other Netflix films like Bird Box that also got theatrical releases in the hopes of getting Academy Award consideration. Bird Box does not belong in the same discussion as a movie made for the cinema. They are apples and oranges. Here is why. The primary reason has to do with the experience. And the secondary reason has to do with the cinematography. Television and film are different formats. They are different experiences. And there are a set of rules that everybody adopts when you are making a film for the cinema. You have to open it a certain way. You have to pace it a certain way. You have to tell your story in a certain way for it to be a satisfying cinematic experience. Those rules don't apply to film. Those rules don't apply to television. Television is a very different experience. Television tends to be start and stop. And I can, if it's on Netflix, I can start watching it today. I can finish watching it a week from now. It doesn't need to be a continuous experience. It doesn't have to pass the same kind of audience test that a cinematic film does. And this is what Steven Spielberg is saying. Steven Spielberg should know. He has worked extensively in both television and film. One of his earliest feature films was a film called, one of his earliest features, I should say, is something called Duel, which is a TV movie about a guy fighting with a tractor trailer driver in a very bad case of road rage on desert highways. Steven Spielberg produces television and film. He knows the difference between the mediums. And what Steven Spielberg is saying is that there is an artistic difference, an experiential difference, a cultural difference between sitting in a dark room and watching a movie and sitting in your living room and watching a movie. I agree with Steven Spielberg 100%. I do not believe that Netflix movies should be considered alongside Hollywood movies. Is Roma an exception to that rule? Absolutely. Because Alfonso Cuarón is not making a TV movie. Roma is not a TV movie. Roma was made to be a cinematic film. It has all the hallmarks of great cinema. And it is great cinema. It owes a lot to European filmmaking of the 70s and the 1980s. It owes a lot to the Latin literary tradition. The production design of it, the cinematography of it. every aspect of it is designed to be experienced on a big screen. It just happens to be on a small screen. So Roma may not be a great example of this, but there are other things. There are other films that are produced for Netflix that really just don't have to follow the same rules. They're not held up to the same standard. Now, if Netflix were willing to go out and distribute these films the same way that other movies are, okay, if you put Bird Box in the cinemas the same way that a company like Disney will put Captain Marvel in cinemas, or Universal will put a Blumhouse film in the cinemas and see how it does, you're probably going to see that movie fail. It does great on Netflix in the first week of January when nothing's on TV and everyone's coming down from the holidays and people are buzzing about it on social media. But if you put that movie in a movie theater, is it going to survive? No, it's not. The production value is too low. The pacing of it is all wrong for a movie theater. What's on the screen isn't particularly compelling. It doesn't look like a professionally made movie in places. By the way, I can say and did say the same things about The Wife. Okay, I thought The Wife looked like a Hallmark Channel movie. So there is this line blurring where the aesthetic of the television movie is finding its way into the cinema. And cinema purists like Steven Spielberg and myself sit back and say, oh, we have to stop this. And the way that you draw the line on this is to say to these streaming services and to say to the cable companies, you know, we haven't seen HBO try and win Oscars with their original movies. I think they've done it maybe once or twice, where they bought a movie, put it in the theaters for a couple of months, and then rolled it out on HBO. There was the movie about Roy Cohn from a few years back. I remember that they did that. They've done it with some of their documentaries. Showtime did it with their O.J. Simpson documentary. Every now and again, they'll do it. But they're not like Netflix, where every week they're like, hey, every year they're like, hey, here's our Oscar contender movies that spent 3 weeks in the theater. Oh, and we're not going to tell you whether or not we sold any tickets. You know, it is a different animal. And if streaming services want to solve this problem, they should go and get their own awards show. I don't think Netflix should be in contention for the Emmys either, because they don't follow the rules of broadcast television. You can make a stronger case because you are producing television that looks and feels like television. But really what the streamers should do is, instead of trying to hang on and crash the party of the Oscars and Emmys, go get your own darn awards show. All right, let's get the streamies or the cord cutties or whatever you're going to call it, where Netflix and Hulu and Amazon and Apple and Disney Plus and the WB, whatever their thing is called, all go head to head and put all of their series head to head, and we figure out who is the best among them. I'm all on board with that. And I don't particularly like award shows. I don't watch many award shows, but I'd watch that. And you'd generate news and you'd generate buzz and you'd leave cinema alone. And really, this is Steven Spielberg saying, and me agreeing, leave cinema alone. Cinema is a thing. Cinema is a unique and distinct art form. And when you come in here with your Netflix movie, it's kind of the equivalent of having a show of fine art that is all paintings, and someone comes in with some photographs and says, hey, judge the photographs alongside the paintings. And all the painters are sitting there going, that's not a painting. And the photographer's saying, well, no, but it's the same size and shape as a painting. And the painters are like, but that's not a painting. And the photographer's saying, what? It's an image in a frame. That's the same size and shape. No, all visual art should be looked at the same. It's not. Because artists, like Steven Spielberg, understand that any particular medium that you deal in has rules. Any motion picture that is made for serious consideration in theatrical distribution has to follow those rules. Stuff that's made for Netflix, it's a different environment. It's a different thing. And I'm going to give you some examples of films that are candidates for cinema. Must be looked at as cinema, because the experience they present to you in a cinema is wildly different from the experience that you get at home. The first one of these is the most recent film on my list.
A little tip for you.
And
never fly first class.
Oh, God. Stupid ads. And it is a magnificent motion picture that I believe suffered from terrible, terrible substandard marketing. Because this film is a true spectacle. And if you really want to appreciate this film, you have got to see it in 3D IMAX. That's what it was meant to be, is a 3D IMAX spectacle.
Why do you risk death? For me, this is life.
Welcome to New York. Anything to declare?
I'm going to hang a high wire between the two towers of the World Trade Center and work on it.
Good luck.
No matter where I was going or what I was doing, I was always searching, looking for the perfect place to hang my wire.
Whoa.
I need you to help me pull this off.
I got just the guys. Now it starts.
Come on, make it snappy. I'm in a red zone.
I'll figure out how to get the wire across.
I think we should wait.
No!
This is extremely illegal, not to mention dangerous.
It's full of doubts. But when it's time to step on the wire, I don't know if I'll be able to take my first step.
Your heart will tell you what to do.
The man is obviously crazy. Are we just here to watch him die?
This isn't a game, Philippe. One mistake out there, and you're going to die.
If you did not see The Walk in theaters, if you did not see it in full 3D IMAX, you missed one of the great cinematic experiences of the 20th century. And I hope they bring it back because it was spectacular. If you have a fear of heights, it's probably not anything that you ever want to see in the theater because the whole point of the movie is to put you on that wire stretched between the towers of the World Trade Center. Looking down, looking up, looking around, actually being there. And this was something that cinema did for a long time. The whole reason that you went to the movies was to see parts of the world and to have experiences that there was no way you would ever have in your average everyday life. Robert Zemeckis made a throwback to that kind of film with The Walk, and took full advantage of every bit of technology that was available to him to immerse the audience in that experience. It's a shame to me that it was rejected by audiences. The film did not do well. Everything around it is good. You know, it's not a great movie. It's well crafted. The story is told well enough. But the reason we're going is to be on that wire, to look down from the edge of the top of the World Trade Center and see New York City below. And some people maybe just didn't want to have that experience, but for those who did, it was spectacular. And it was a great example of the power that cinema has to transport you. And if you are a little afraid of heights, which I tend to be, not so much in tall buildings, but, you know, outdoor heights, the tension of all of that leading up to that just enhances the dramatic impact of the film. I hope somebody brings it back. I hope it finds its way back into IMAX at some point in the near future, because it is a film that definitely deserves a second look and must be seen as it was meant to be seen in 3D IMAX, where you just can't look. You can close your eyes, but you can't look away because you are looking down at New York City from 1,000 feet up in the sky. It's amazing. Second one is another fairly recent film, one that I had the good fortune to catch in a 70mm roadshow version right around the corner here at the Davis Square Somerville Theater. If you like cinema, I highly recommend the Somerville Theater, which has a 70mm projection and a 70mm setup in their main auditorium, and still shows films in 70mm all the time. Good place to go see some old films in 70mm, or in the rare case that somebody modern decides to shoot a film in 70mm Panavision, you can see that there too.
Got room for one more? They call him the hangman. When the handbill says dead or alive, the rest of us just shoot you in the back, come up on top of a perch somewhere, and bring you in dead over a saddle. But when John Roof the hangman catches you, you hang.
Get in, boys!
This here is Daisy Domergue. She's wanted dead or alive for murder. When that sun comes out, I'm taking this woman to hang. Is there anybody here committed to stopping me from doing that?
Well, well, well. Looks like Minnie's haberdashery is about to get cozy for the next few days.
Yes, it does.
One of them fellas is not what he says he is.
Move a little strange, you're gonna get a bullet. Not a warning, not a question. A bullet.
We're talking.
Now, Quentin Tarantino is one of the people, one of the few people in Hollywood who could get away with shooting a movie in 70mm Panavision because he feels like it. But he's not doing it just because he feels like it. He's doing it because he appreciates what Panavision offers. And there was a shot very early on in The Hateful Eight, probably about 10 minutes into the film, I think, where you are up on a ridge looking down on a stagecoach as it moves across this snowy mountain landscape. The stagecoach is being pulled by three teams of horses. And the horses fill the frame up to the back of the stagecoach. So that's really the only thing that you see, is just this stagecoach and the horses. But you see all of them in this widescreen shot. And you see a tremendous, incredible amount of detail in the horses' movement, in the stagecoach itself, in the snow being tossed around by their hooves. And when you sit there and you look at this shot, you realize this is something that could only be done in a 70mm frame. If you try to do it at a narrower aspect ratio, you have to pull the camera further back, and you are not going to get the same level of detail that you get. Now, most of the second act of this turns into an interior story, and you can make the case that you don't really need 70mm widescreen to do something that is set-bound. However, the production design in this is spectacular, and you get to feel as you sit there watching this in 70 millimeter, you almost feel that you can reach out and touch the different objects that are on the screen in front of you. The exterior stuff is mind-blowing. One of the great things about 70 millimeter is its ability to capture huge vistas and its ability to give you a sense of size and scope. No one may have used that ability quite to the extent or quite as well as the director of my number three film that you must go see at some point in cinemas. This one gets re-released in theaters on a fairly regular basis. And is one of those things that if you keep an eye on the Somerville Theater, right up the street from us in Davis Square in Somerville, you'll probably see it pop up at some point before too long. This is the oldest film on the list and considered one of the great motion picture classics of all time.
I deem him one of the greatest beings alive in our time. We shall never see his like again. His name will live in history. It will live in the annals of war. It will live in the legends of Arabia.
Who is he?
Petru. Tapas!
What is your name?
My name is for my friends. None of my friends is a murderer.
Quarter of a century, controversy has raged around the name of T.E. Lawrence. No man of our time has drawn upon himself so much praise and so much criticism. Lawrence of Arabia, the man torn between two civilizations. Lawrence of Arabia, filmed against a canvas of awesome magnificence.
Lieutenant Lawrence, sir, is not your military advisor.
But I would like to hear his opinion.
Damn it, Lawrence, who do you take your orders from?
From Lord Faisal, in Faisal's tent.
Hailing the birth of a new star, Peter O'Toole as Lawrence of Arabia. What was he really like, this controversial figure who became a legend in his own lifetime?
He was the most extraordinary man I ever knew.
He was a very great man.
He was a poet, a scholar, and a mighty warrior. He was also the most shameless exhibitionist since Barnum and Bailey.
What, in your opinion, do these people hope to gain from this war?
They hope to gain their freedom.
There's one born every minute.
They're going to get it, Mr. Bentley. I'm going to give it to them.
Lawrence and Arabia. Together, they made history. Now, a gathering of international stars unfolds the story. Alec Guinness as Prince Faisal.
The English have a great hunger for desolate places. I fear they hunger for Arabia.
Anthony Quinn as Auda Abu Taihi.
I carry 23 great wounds, all got in battle. 75 men have I killed with my own hands in battle. I scatter, I burn my enemies' tents. I take away their flocks and herds. The Turks pay me a golden treasure, yet I am poor. Because I am a river to my people.
Jack Hawkins as General Allenby.
I believe your name will be a household word when you would have to go to the War Museum to find who Allenby was.
You're the most extraordinary man I ever met. Leave me alone.
What?
Leave me alone.
Jose Ferrer as the Turkish Bey.
Your skin is very fair.
Also starring Anthony Quayle, Claude Rains, Arthur Kennedy, with Omar Sharif as Ali, and Peter O'Toole as Lawrence.
I don't care how big your television at home is. It cannot do justice to the 70mm Panavision presentation of Lawrence of Arabia. It just can't. It's not big enough. You are going to wind up watching a 3-inch high little letterboxed sliver of a great motion picture that was meant to be seen on a widescreen. And one of the things that David Lean does in this is he shoots these massive desert landscapes, and we'll have like little tiny people over in the corner. Alfonso Cuarón actually calls back to this in an establishing shot in Roma when the nanny is going out to the desert to find the father of her child. And we start in on this shot of the sun that slowly pans down to reveal this desert landscape. It's very much drawn from the David Lean playbook. And what David Lean is doing is he's using this massive frame that he has and this massive amount of space that he has to give you a sense of the scale of what's happening and the importance or the unimportance of characters in this story. Lawrence gets bigger in the frame as this film goes on, and we see him emerging and rising and growing as this great hero to the Arabian people. The battle scenes in this are unlike anything that you were ever going to see today. The CGI stuff just really cannot compare to the stuff that they were doing live with actual people back in the day. This is one of those cast of thousands kinds of movies. Highly, highly recommended. It must be seen in 70mm to be appreciated. So these first three films I've given you are all films that it's about cinematography. It's about the detail. It is about the experience visually of the film and the ability of the film to transport you, or the ability of the film to have greater life in its images. These next two are more about the total film-going experience. Horror movies are always better in a movie theater. And there is no horror movie in my eyes that is a better example of this than this film, which many of you will know, who have listened to me before, is on my list of the five greatest motion pictures of all time.
Roses are red, violets are blue, but the iris is the flower that will mean the end of it.
From Suspiria. Suspiria. You can hide from Suspiria. Suspiria. But you cannot escape. The only thing more terrifying than the last 12 minutes of Suspiria are the first 92.
Suspiria is generally very easy to turn up at film festivals around Halloween. You'll find it at the Coolidge. You'll find it at the Somerville Theater. It shows up in a lot of different places. Horror movies are always better in a movie theater for a couple of reasons. Number one, you are not in your cozy, safe, warm living room where you can hide under a blanket or turn off the movie if it gets too scary. So you're in a strange environment, and that makes it a little more effective. Number two, you're in a room full of other people. And the collective tension that the audience feels that fills the room, and the release of that tension, you know, when somebody gets scared or something funny happens, enhances the emotional impact of the film. It enhances the experience. These movies were made to get a group of people sitting in a dark room to react a certain way. And they are designed to work better with a crowd than they do at home. The third thing is that you do not have control over the audio or the image. The volume level is set for you. The brightness of the picture is set for you. You can't pause, rewind. You can't turn it down because it's too loud or whatever. You are at the mercy of other people who have designed this experience for you. I will put Suspiria out there as the best example of this and the film that you absolutely must go see, because Suspiria basically exists as a filmed nightmare, as a dark twist on a fairy tale that just assaults you with images and colors and light and darkness and sound, all of it designed to keep you off balance, off kilter. The film is scary on television. If you've got a nice surround setup and you've got a nice big screen TV, but it is nothing compared to seeing it in the theater. If you have never seen Suspiria before you ever see it on television, I encourage you to go see it in a theater. If you have seen Suspiria and you're like, I don't quite get what the big deal is, go see it in a theater. Go see it the way it was meant to be seen, and you'll understand why this film is so effective. The other thing that I'll say is, if you really don't like Italian horror movies, if the whole stilted nature of them gets to you and you're like, I'm never going to see an Italian horror movie, Texas Chainsaw Massacre has the same effect. Once the chainsaw starts revving up and you're in the dark woods at the end of the movie, you understand why this is considered one of the scariest motion pictures of all time. Both of these films suffer when you watch them at home. I would make the case that Texas Chainsaw Massacre suffers even more because the problems with the film start to come to the forefront. And if you're watching it with the volume down, you're really not getting it the way that it's meant to be seen. So either one is probably going to be available sometime in September, October of this year for you to go see in a theater. Texas Chainsaw Massacre or Suspiria, either one, highly recommended. Go see those and understand what the cinematic experience brings to this and why that is different from watching something on Netflix. My last one is a thriller and an Academy Award winner, a multiple Academy Award winner. Maybe not a film that you would think is something that you absolutely have to see in the cinema to appreciate, but believe me when I tell you, if you've only ever seen this on TV, and if you have a certain age, I'm pretty sure you have, you must see it in the theater to really understand why it is a Best Picture winner.
You spook easily, Starling?
Not yet, sir.
He's past the others. The last cell. I'll be watching. You'll do fine.
A killer is on the loose.
Keeps them alive for 3 days. Then he shoots them, skins them, and dumps them.
A rookie FBI agent is on his trail.
He's got real physical strength, cautious, precise, and he's never impulsive. He'll never stop.
But in order to track him down, she'll have to match wits.
I'll help you catch him, Clary.
Believe me, you don't want Hannibal Lecter inside your head.
With the darkest of all minds.
Just do your job, but never forget what he is.
Oh, he's a monster. Pure psychopath. So rare to capture one alive.
So close to the way you're going to catch him, do you realize that? Oh, Clarice, your problem is you need to get more fun out of life.
You told me you don't spook easily.
You call this easy, sir?
Lecter's missing an arm.
Man's a raving maniac. Who knows what he'll do?
I'm going to tell you something about The Silence of the Lambs, which, if you haven't previously noticed it, will forever change the way that you see this film. Part of the reason The Silence of the Lambs is so effective as a thriller is because Jonathan Demme breaks one of the cardinal rules of filmmaking. All of his characters look directly into the camera when they are talking. So whether it is Clarice Starling talking to somebody, she is looking directly into the camera. But more importantly, all of the men in the movie look directly into the camera when they are talking to Clarice. And once you know to look for this, you realize it. The other thing about it is when all of these characters are looking at Clarice, they are looking down. And Jonathan Demme does this very deliberately to make Clarice Starling small and vulnerable relative to all of these forces working against her. But it has another effect when you're watching it in a movie theater. Because when you were in a movie theater, you are below the level of the screen for the most part. Stadium theaters that we have today, no. But the theaters that we had back in 1991 didn't have those high elevations on them. So if you're sitting in the center of a movie theater, the screen is full of the image of Anthony Hopkins. And his eyes are looking down directly at you. He is looking into your soul. It is unnerving. It is terrifying. And you want to get away from it. This is part of the reason the film is so effective. And it is completely lost if you watch it at home. This is Watch This with Chris Earle. I am Derek Gary, filling in for Chris Earle. We're going to have See It, Rent It, Skip It when we come back in just a minute. I'm going to go see if Shea Spillane is in the house so that we can get the big picture underway in the not-too-distant future. In the meantime, another one of my soundtrack favorites of all time, this one going back to, I think, the late 1970s. I know it's the late 1970s here on WMFO Medford.
Are we gonna do what they say can't be done? We've got a long way to go and a short time to get there. I'm eastbound, just watch old Bandit run. Keep your foot hard on the pedal, son, never mind them brakes. Let it all hang out, cause we got a run to make. The boys are thirsty in Atlanta, and there's beer in Texarkana, and we'll bring it back no matter what it takes. Eastbound and down, trucking. Are we gonna do what they say can't be done? We've got a long way to go and a short time to get there. I'm eastbound, just watch old Bandit run. They say can't be done. We've got a long way to go and a short time to get there. I'm eastbound, just watch old Bandit run. Old Smokey's got them ears on. He's hot on your trail. He ain't gonna rest till you're in jail. So you got to dodge him, you got to duck him. You gotta keep that diesel trucking. Just put that hammer down and give it hell. Eastbound and down, and trucking. Are we gonna do what they say can't be done? We've got a long way to go and a short time to get there. I'm eastbound, just watch old Bandit run.
Airport. In the air and on the ground, action, suspense, excitement that never lets up.
Starring Burt Lancaster, Dean Martin, George Kennedy, more than a dozen top stars.
Airport comes roaring at you with the power of a 747 at full throttle.
Grab him, he's got a bomb!
You stay where you are!
Don't try to get any closer.
You'll kill yourself or nothing if you explode that bomb. Your insurance is canceled. It's worthless.
This airport is staying open. You're blocking my runway. Petroni, he'll take over.
He tears his ship apart. I hope you've got $8 million to pay for it.
I'll have this out of here by midnight.
And if I have to pull that plane out with my teeth.
The number one novel of the year, now an overpowering motion picture.
The Ross Hunter production, Airport, from Universal. Rated G, all ages.
Everybody, Jamie Lee Curtis here for RAD, recording artists, actors, and athletes against drunk driving. What should you do to stop a friend from driving if they've been drinking? Answer, whatever it takes. Think before you drink. Designate before you celebrate. Choose a designated driver. Remember, friends don't let friends drive drunk.
A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
Medford 91.5 FM. This is Watch This with Chris Earle. I am Derek Gary. I am your Chris Earle for tonight. Chris Earle will be back next week. Shay Spillane will be with us as soon as she can repair the microphone that is falling apart in front of us. I can bring your mic up and we can hear you try and repair the microphone that is...
I can speak into it.
Wait a second. Which one is that? That's mic four. Slide mic three over, and we'll deal with mic four later in the show.
Hey, kids, maybe if you're studying radio, you should learn how to not make the microphone break.
Yeah, don't play with the mounts on the microphone. It's a bad thing. We don't like it when people do that. Yeah, you can. I think it twists the opposite direction that you would think it would twist. Maybe. I don't know. Is that working? All right. It's because some of these are like opposite thread. All right. So we have the microphone back. It is WMFO. Oh, it is goodness. The technical difficulties hour.
What a ridiculous evening. I mean, hey, guys. How you doing?
Yeah. So we got microphone. All right. So See It, Read It, Skip It is the way that we close out this show every week. Taking a look at the top 10 films at the box office and whether or not they are worth your time to go and see in the theater. Number one this week, we all know what it is, $152 million opening weekend. It's made more than $500 million so far. Mm-hmm. Captain Marvel, I gave my review of it at the top of the show tonight and basically said, you know, if you like the Marvel movies, if you are predisposed to liking Captain Marvel, you're going to like it. Go see it. If you,
I mean, Brie is super dope. Like, just as a human being, she's very cool.
If you are inclined to dislike this movie, it will give you lots and lots of reasons not to like it, including Brie Larson, who is poorly and unfortunately kind of miscast, but also given a role that she doesn't really have much to do. So, where is that music coming from?
It's coming from my phone, but I don't know how to turn it off.
Why is there music coming from your phone?
Stop.
I'm confused.
It's Phil Collins, too.
Yeah, everybody likes Phil Collins. But
I mean, I do love Phil Collins, but I don't know why he's turned on my phone.
It is WMFO Medford, by the way. So I'll give it a see it. Shay, you going to go see the Captain Marvels?
I don't think I'll see it. Oh, thank God. I don't think I'll see it. I'll probably rent it.
You're not a superhero movie fan.
No, I'm more on, like, if there's a lot of murdering, then I'm totally all over it, but...
Well, you might like some of this other stuff. There is, it is a good appetizer for Avengers Endgame.